The Sixers tell James Harden to stay home. Victor Wembanyama shows flashes of greatness in his first NBA game. And what a minutes restriction means for LeBron and the Lakers. All that and more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends. Welcome back to No Cap Room. My name is Jake Fisher. I am a senior NBA reporter at Yahoo Sports. Joining me as always, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. It is my man, your man, everyone's man, Dan Devine. What is up?
Jake, I feel further away from you than I normally do. We're rarely in the same place, but we're extra not in the same place right now.
We are extra not in the same place. I'm coming to you from an undisclosed hotel room in Milwaukee that I don't need to be undisclosed because the second we record this, I will be leaving, going to the arena, and then driving to Chicago to fly out tomorrow morning. But we've got live NBA basketball, which is why I'm here. Sixers Bucks tonight. I'm guessing this is going to be out before that game is over, but that's why we're going to look at all the stuff that's happened so far this week. We're going to talk Lakers, Nuggets, the whole jumble of every other team besides the what's the late game tonight? I don't even know. I'm just on full Bucks Sixers.
It's Lakers Suns, and you're not going to have Booker or Bradley Beal for that one either. So you picked the right one to travel to. But also, how could you, in all those words, none of those two of those words were Victor or Wembanyama. How could we possibly get this far into the podcast without mentioning his name? We're going to talk about him as a big part, a literal and figurative big part of these first couple of days of NBA action.
That's why I need a co-host. I can't be my own solo host like you or Vinny Goodwill. I need you keeping me in line.
I was waiting for that. All right, good. Okay. So one important thing that a host does is transition to the next thing. So why don't we go ahead and transition, Jake?
Yes. I am in Milwaukee, unlike James Harden. Mm. When news broke yesterday, Wednesday, that he reported back, but that he was not going to be with the team, I really wanted to quote tweet our Ball Don't Lie account with Chris Haynes' reporting saying, I have, however, made the trip to Milwaukee, but no one cares. I'm here. I think what people do care about is like actually what's happening, because we can read tit for tat back and forth. And, you know, there's been all this talk about like how much of a distraction will he be and blah, blah, blah. I think, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I'll stop. Dan, do you care? Are you moved at all by the latest non-basketball developments of this segment? Because to me, segment's what we're talking about here, of this actual program, this whole melodrama that's been taking place between Houston, Texas, and now Aspen, Colorado, and Camden, New Jersey, and other locations on the NBA map.
I mean, it's important because he is the next significant domino to fall, it feels like. You know, I mean, you've got he's important because of what he connects to and what that represents. He connects to, you know, the reigning MVP and what Joel Embiid's status is going to be over the course of the season, and potentially beyond. He's important because the Philadelphia 76ers, in theory, are a championship contender. And, you know, either he's going to be part of that, or if he goes, what he brings back is going to augment that. Or if this becomes a total fiasco at an even greater degree, they just remove themselves from that equation. And it's important because he's connected to the Clippers, who had a big opening night win, but also, you know, there's many people that talk that continue to look at them as, you know, one big move away, and maybe he's that move. So, you know, flight patterns and who shows up on what tarmac and who is told by whom not to continue moving forward with their luggage or whatever. I mean, that interests me insofar as it's funny. But beyond that, I don't know. Yeah, like the incremental movements of this feel a little bit like, all right, let's just get to the finish line. But that said, I've not like talked to anybody about it or made any calls about it. So you would be more informed than me as the people's insider. You'd be more informed than me about what's actually happening with the latest developments here.
I appreciate that. I appreciate your confidence in my ability to find out things. The one thing I'll say on this now before we do touch on the little Clippers bit that you mentioned, because I want to say something. Because I'll have more to write tonight, but it's like been very clear to me from the time I spent around Philly when they came to Brooklyn for a preseason game last Monday. I believe it was the 16th. I looked at the calendar earlier today. And like I chewed around this morning, this is not a team and this is not a head coach and Nick Nurse that seems to really care whether James Harden's there or not. And I don't say that to say like this is a big middle finger James Harden, like we don't want you here. I think this whole roster and this coaching staff and this front office has been very prepared for this to be an undetermined thing until he actually is suited up and playing. So the Sixers have made it clear to James Harden and his people that they want him to be in congruence with their ramp up schedule, whatever the X's that they need to check and boxes that they need to cross and I's and T's dotted and whatever.
Before all he gets of that back was on the wrong, court. But it was in the right ballpark.
Exactly. That was my point. Like, yeah. Who knows? I even asked someone today, like, what exactly do you need him to do in order to get back? And they're like, well, he's 34 with a history of hamstring injuries. He hasn't been with the team for 10 days. Like, it's kind of irresponsible from a medical training standpoint to just like snap your fingers and say, yeah, you can come back and play NBA regular season basketball after not playing in the preseason at all, right? Which I do get. I also do get from like an NBA power dynamic standpoint, you can't just allow a player who requested a trade to like just show up on a whim and say I'm playing and then like it's all hunky dory too. So all that stuff aside, I think like the Clippers side of it, like we know what Philly wants. They want James Harden to play. They need him to play because they either need him to help Joel Embiid compete for a championship or they need him to play to boost his trade value that would influence another team outside of the Los Angeles Clippers to make an effort for him. Because right now, Malcolm Brogdon didn't look so hot in Portland in his opener against the Clippers last night. They got a front row seat to watch him not look fantastic, let's say. And Bones Highland was awesome. Bones Highland, who I was surprised when I learned before last year's February trade deadline that, or last season, I should say, that Denver was just going to move Bones for the sake of, you know, clearing out, shuffling deck. We can't have all these people here. We need to try to get a center who can back up Nikola Jokic. Like, they just kind of gave Bones Highland away for a couple of second round picks that they then used to go get Thomas Bryant, who didn't play for them at all really in the postseason. So now he's with the Clippers. He's potentially their backup point guard until they go do something else. And like for him to come out, he's put on a little bit of muscle. I don't know what hashtag muscle watch. I don't know.
Shout out to Lang Whitaker, the godfather of muscle watch.
I don't know if we're 10, 15, however many pounds, but he also played next to Russ during certain stretches last night. So like for now, this is it. Bones Highland is your backup Clippers point guard. James Harden is making his way. Anything else to say on this subject matter, Dan Devine?
I think you're right to note that from the Sixers perspective, it's you know, there's an institutional memory part of like, we did this before. We, you know, with the guys here, great, we move. If he's not, great, we move. And Nurse has also had to live that life and do it with, you know, the Kawhi Leonard load managing and everything else. Like, we have to kind of have two different teams and two different plans of attack. And if the plan B is throw Tyrese Maxey the keys, as referenced in a very good profile that Jake Fisher recently wrote for Yahoo Sports, and, you know, lean even harder on the MVP, well, you know, there are worse plan Bs, which, not for nothing, that's plugging again. One of the reasons that the Sixers were one of my five most interesting teams heading into the season was, like, objectively, you could look at that and say, for like three quarters of the league, we're building around Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey with a couple of proven vets around him and some intriguing young guys that we think have runway. Like, two thirds of the league would say, yes, I would like that. It's just that the context that the Sixers exist in is so, you know, toxic and so much scar tissue and so many other dynamics to deal with that it feels like they're doomed, even as they might be doomed to like 48 wins in a second round out. But I think for a lot of franchises, it's like, well, let us deal with that kind of strife and stress. But in Philly, it all sort of feels more magnified.
So we're going to bounce around a couple of other teams' games with the reminder that one game sample sizes are one game sample sizes. That doesn't mean you and I don't get paid to talk into a microphone to each other about this stuff.
Exactly.
And that doesn't mean there aren't little things that we can pick up on and just like, log on our charts to continue to evaluate moving forward. So that being said, after I egregiously buried him in our intro and you were very kind to say Victor Wembanyama, Victor Wembanyama, Victor Wembanyama, say it three times.
Turn around behind me? Did he pop out through the mirror, the windows?
No, it's not that. You say it three times and just there's a hand or a limb just like reaching across the room. Because every picture of him in motion is like that. It just looks like a gaggle of limbs going in all different directions because he's so damn long. And look, you can complain about the foul trouble. Regardless, I mean, final stat line, 23 minutes, 15 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. But like, regardless, I think what the take has been from the preseason and through last night in an eventual 126-119 Mavericks win over San Antonio, the guy has translated. He is here. He is going to be an impact no matter what, even when he's got 5 fouls and is limited to half the game because he had that insane little flurry late in the fourth quarter, just like he did. I forget what preseason game it was. Was it against? I'm not even going to try. There's just been too much going on. But he has shown the tendency of just like, oh, I can catch a lob here. And like when he's out on the perimeter contesting three pointers, basically, like he's then taking off down court and he is the largest possible hit ahead target in like the NBA has ever seen since Yao Ming. So there's just a lot that he does that he's bringing that we're still figuring out, that he's still figuring out. But all I'll say before I give it to you is that like he has just clearly shown he's going to be a force on both sides of the court, which is very rare for any rookie in the history of the league to do. I don't know if he's going to be an all-star. I don't know if he's going to be an MVP candidate this year, but he's going to be someone who other teams are having absolute headaches about on both sides of NBA basketball, which truly is a rarity.
Yeah, and so you're right. A lot of this is stuff that we did see in the preseason. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I locked into every preseason game because I knew that I was going to be spending the next 8 months on this. So I kind of like, you know, reserve those nights as best you can. But I mean, you see it immediately, like literally the first defensive possession they had, he completely shrinks the weak side of the floor and gets over and blocks a Kyrie pull up. And it's like, oh, right. 8 foot wingspan means you're never out of the play or you're barely ever out of the play. So long as you don't take yourself out of the play. And that's like, there was a lot of that push and pull watching him in the first game of, he knows he can get to so much and he knows he can make so many plays. He's maybe a little over aggressive, a little frenetic and overly exuberant about, oh, you know, now I'm going to double this guy and we're just going to like swallow him up and we're going to force a turnover. But when you do that and you like help off the strong side corner, somebody's getting an open three. And so like Pop will get those things into him. Like Pop wants him to play with absolute freedom on offense, as evidenced by the fact that like his first shot was a pull-up three in transition. And you're like, maybe get a little closer to the basket, my guy. You're the biggest person anyone's ever seen. Get within arm's reach. It's not that hard. At the free throw line, you're basically within arm's reach.
Boban Marjanovic is incredibly offended right now.
I think Boban's living his best life. He's in a lot of commercials. He's been in John Wick. I think he's doing fine. He's not particularly offended by this right now. He's got a goldfish partnership last I remember with Tobias Harris. Like, I think he's doing fine. But that, you know, there's all these things that immediately jump off the screen and the confidence is obviously just radiating off of him. The foul trouble is an issue because it wasn't like he was just getting ticky-tack stuff. It was like, no, you hip check a guy and that's a foul. Smaller player is up in your kitchen. If you get your arms up, that's going to be an offensive foul. If it's kind of hard not to reach in when every movement is reaching further than every other person on the floor, but you can't afford to reach and slap down at the ball. He needs to get more discipline with that, but that'll come. This is a 19-year-old in his first NBA game. I'm sure that his adrenaline was through the roof and he was, sort of very frantic about it. Good breakdown.
Can I say
of
a quick thing there?
By all means, go ahead.
Just Dennis Schroeder said it after the Raptors beat Minnesota last night. FIBA rules are different too, like from an officiating standpoint. So you get away with a lot more of those bumps and bruises that you can give on the and he's guarding out in the perimeter as much as he's out stalking the back line of the baseline. Like he is out switching on a guard. He was guarding Kyrie a bunch of plays. Like that's just going to be an adjustment for him from the FIBA to the NBA standpoint too.
Absolutely. And but you, one thing that I wanted to point to that you're right, you were right to note right off the bat is like, so one smaller issue that San Antonio had, they were not great in transition last season. Like, I believe from cleaning the glass, it was 25th in points per play in transition and around like the middle of the pack and how often they got into transition. A very good way to jack both of those numbers up very quickly is when the 7'4" guy leaks out after his man takes a shot, just throw it. Like, this is like the receiver's down there somewhere. I can't overthrow him. So, well, DeSean Jackson's going to be down there somewhere. I can't overthrow him.
No. It's not. I appreciate the
Eagles
reference.
I know he's not a current reference, but he's a fast guy.
No.
And a Philly guy.
But it's not that. It's reminiscent of when there's like a 6'10" freshman on the freshman team and he's not good enough to play varsity. So they just stick him on the freshman team to get reps and you can just throw it anywhere in the gym and he's going to one hand catch it because he's a monster. He's not a speedster like juking out dudes and he's going to take off downfield and he's taking the top off opposing defenses. He is the largest human being you've ever seen, as you said earlier.
All right. Fair enough. I was trying to pander to you with a Philly football reference, but
I appreciate it.
You know, fine. We'll get it. But anyway, they missed him on one of those in the first half. They got him a dunk on one in the fourth quarter. Like, just do that because he's running the floor hard. So that's a really good sort of easy opportunities. Lots of opportunities there for them.
We need to get Kevin Love on the Spurs is what we're saying.
Yes, that is a great call. Or somebody on the Spurs needs to be watching Kevin Love clips like nonstop. You mentioned the fourth quarter flurry after he picked up his fifth foul. Reminded me a lot of Zion when Zion's debut, which was against the Spurs in 2020. He had missed like the first half of the season. And everyone, the first three quarters of that game, it's like, I don't know, he's only playing in these sort of short bursts and you're not really seeing everything translate. When's it all like, when are we going to get to the fireworks factory? And then the fourth quarter was when it all kind of turned on, 17 points in the fourth. It wasn't quite that much for Wembanyama last night, but he really, like, you saw all of those talents coming together and it's like, oh my God, if he can stay on the floor for long periods of time, this is like, I don't know what the hell you're going to do with that guy. And so seeing that was, it was enticing enough to make you want to stick around, even as the Mavericks, wound up taking the game, which was interesting in its own right.
Yeah, the Spurs are going to be friskier, I think, than people realize. I don't think they're going to be good record-wise, but they're going to be frisky. I mean, Devin Vassell is really, 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 really good. I'm going to throw this take out there.
Sure, let's go for it.
I texted a buddy with the Spurs and another friend on a group chat. In the confidence of this group chat that I am now breaking, but I'm breaking for myself. I'm tattling on me. All the mid-range stuff he was getting, the fluidity with it. Vassell to me has like Devin Booker upside. I'm not saying he's going to realize it, but I do see some type of similarities in the shot profile and how he moves and how he gets to it. Vassell's really, really good. Keldon Johnson's really good. They're building something fun down there. Sohan's shot is looking far more impressive compared to the fact that he's still shooting free throws one-handed. Shout out Brett Brown. But I think the other guy that really jumped off the screen that everyone was really excited about was the other big, tall rookie, Derek Lively. There's a bunch of centers really impressing me across the league last night that we will continue to get to. But yeah, Derek Lively, 16 points in 30 minutes. 10 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 block. The lob threat was real for sure, and Luka has never really had that ever. Like the couple months where Porzingis was super healthy and in the bubble before he tore his meniscus, he was doing that. But like Derek Lively is far as clearly more of the Tyson Chandler, Clint Capella role that, I mean, just at, if you want to talk about DeSean Jackson taking off the top of a defense, like that's where literally the top of a defense is different in the NBA. The geometry is different. It's so real and it has impact on all the little side stuff that Kyrie can do off the ball when Luka is running those high screens. And like, it's just really impressive to see a rookie handle that on the defense. Like defense stepped up like because of him and they like kind of seemed to fall apart whenever he wasn't on the court. And that's just kind of, I mean, obviously work in progress. One game he will continue to be improving and scouts will try to look at ways to punish the rookie center that is the one glue holding together Dallas's defensive house of cards. But in a night when it was all about Victor Wembanyama, Victor Wembanyama, Victor Wembanyama, Derek Lively, Derek Lively, Derek Lively stood out.
To me, this is really a glass. Are you a glass half full or glass half empty kind of person for how you look at the at where things shook for the Mavs? Like, they give up, I think it was 43 points in the first quarter. They were like just absolutely getting torn apart in the first half. And you're saying all of our fears about what Dallas's defense would look like are, you know, still here. We're still having these issues. It tightens up significantly in the second half. It gets them into a tight game. They're in the clutch. Oh no, we remember the last time we saw Dallas, they were booting all those clutch games late, and Kyrie and Luka couldn't kind of get on the same page. They were not like magnifying one another's talents. It was your turn, my turn, and then sometimes nobody getting a shot off at the end. They get into crunch time here in a tight game. Now, again, granted, against a team that we expect to be bad, that was trying to figure things out on the fly and like sometimes plays with a point guard, sometimes doesn't, and you know, the Spurs didn't cover themselves in glory in crunch time, but the Mavs had to go win the game, and they did. Plus six in those final 5 minutes. Luka and Kyrie combining for 11 of the final 14 points. I think Luka scored or assisted on all the last 11, including Luka setting up Kyrie for a corner three and Luka hitting the step back dagger. And like, they're running actions and they're making progress in terms of how you weaponize both those guys together. Our producer, John Gennaro, had pointed out in our conversation before the show, like there were some split cut actions and some things that were getting both of those guys running together and like forcing defenses to have to pass them off and navigate the traffic there. And that's going to make, whenever you make somebody think and make choices, you're going to have some open opportunities. The skills that Kyrie and Luka have should make them more complementary than they seemed at the end of last season. And it does seem like they've got better plans for how you work through that now. So it's, do you look at it and say, if you're this bad against what's expected to be a bad offense in the first half, are you going to be a team, like a serious team in the Western Conference? Or you can look at it and say, some of the things that we were really worried about the Mavericks look like they're trending in the right direction. And if Lively's a real player and the kind of lob threat surrounded by shooting that Luka hasn't really had, that really opens up a lot of opportunities for their offense. It, you know, you can look one way, you can look the other, but I think if you're a Dallas fan, you're looking at it and saying, There's a lot to be optimistic about and a lot to feel good about coming out of game one, which is all you could really ask for.
Let's shift to Nuggets Lakers, where there was plenty to be optimistic about for Denver. It looked phenomenal. The rings are cool. I don't know if you saw.
Huge, gigantic, with like a little slide out second ring, right?
Slide out second ring with a banner on top. Very, very nice. Happy for all the people that I know and also like. Not the people I don't like, but then I'm just kidding.
I'm happy specifically for the people that I like and the ones that I don't like. I'm going to try to steal your ring.
I would love to steal an NBA. I mean, that would be my heist. That'd be my, I'll call up Nicolas Cage and
that's right.
No, the thing I want, I will continue to advertise this. I will continue to say this. The thing I want is to build the largest collection known to man of official G League team gear. I've got Mexico City Capitanes stuff. I've got some Fort Wayne Mad Ant stuff. I've got some RGV Vipers stuff. I want as many defunct teams. Someone's promised me Bakersfield Jam shorts. They have never been given to them in my possession yet. That's what I want. I don't want championship rings. I want G League gear with the official Nike swoosh. But back to Denver. We have a note from our producer, John Gennaro. Does Jokic's MVP watch start now? 36 minutes, 29 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists after claiming he didn't touch a basketball all summer. I just looked again, just to double check, just to do my facts, make sure all my things were in order. You and I, Dan Devine, were the only two people in the Yahoo season preview to predict an MVP for Nikola Jokic. But look, the guy's the best player in the league. They just won the title. Like, why wouldn't he win it? As long as like they take care of business. I think it's like as sure a bet as any. I'm not a gambler. I don't even know what the odds are, but Nikola Jokic is that dude, man.
Yeah. The only argument that I saw for, I mean, outside of just is another team going to be like so far and away the best team in the league that the best player on the best team with a representative stat line is going to wind up getting that kind of credit. And that's unclear to me. I think that's why there's been a little bit of motion toward Tatum where people are kind of getting excited about that. But yeah, like the only reason, or I shouldn't say the only reason, Joel Embiid having a phenomenal season was a very good reason last year. But the main reason that Nikola Jokic didn't wind up with another MVP was that there was that sort of specter hanging over his head of, well, can you give a guy a third straight MVP when he has, you know, hasn't made it all the way to the finals, when he hasn't won a championship, when he's flamed out before the conference final, whatever. And that's gone. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. And it's easy enough to write the story of the season, of the year, of like, this is the year he firmly established himself without any doubt about it as the best player in the world. He wins the championship. He has another one of those seasons. Denver's right back at the top of the West and he wins the MVP. Whether that comes to pass or not remains to be seen. But like, I think, yeah, you want, whether even the idea of like Jokic fatigue, I think is going to be, it's not likely to carry around, because people will be like, well, he didn't get it last year and he's clearly the best guy. So, and he was very clearly the best guy in that game on Tuesday night, because there were points where, like, Anthony Davis is a legitimate, like, he was the best defender in the playoffs last year. He's a legitimate defensive player of the year candidate every year, legitimate all defense candidate every year, provided he plays enough games. And he had absolutely nothing he could do with Jokic. Zero. Jokic has essentially figured out how to attack him, and AD does not give him problems defensively. AD has to go outscore him. That's the only way this is going to work. And you saw it at the end of that game. Jokic, the Lakers make their push. And then it's just that starting five, that benefit of continuity that the Nuggets bring into it from last season. They go into their sets. It's Jokic at the elbow. It's KCP screening and then sprinting off. It's Murray handling the ball. And they ran the same play every single time the last 4 or 5 minutes. And they got good shots and buckets every single time. A number of people broke this down. The one that I saw was from Gibson Piper at Half Court Hoops on Twitter. And you could just see, like, there are options out of every single read in the play, and the Lakers did not have an answer for any of it. Until somebody provides better ones than a Lakers team that we expect to be up near the top of the league in defensive efficiency with a defensive player of the year candidate, I don't know what else you do with it. Yeah, I mean, and Jokic is the reason that all of that gets unlocked in the ways that it does.
Meanwhile, for the Lakers, Darvin Ham kind of seemed to acknowledge that LeBron's going to be on a minutes restriction, which seems like quite Spursy. You know, that 2014 team that took down LeBron, where no one played more than 29.7 minutes, whatever it was. Tim Duncan was like a razor edge away from playing 30, but no one could play 30 minutes on that team.
Right.
Like, does that change? And LeBron, there's been plenty of videos circulating on social of him being frustrated about not being able to play point guard and all these types of things. Like, was the Lakers' run to the Western Conference Finals last year, did that give maybe a little bit of like exceeded expectations for what this team really is going to be this season in a Western Conference where LeBron is 1 year closer to 40? That's old. That is not young. That is not young, Dan Devine.
Stop it.
And I mean, the West is tough. I mean, I'll be really curious to see, obviously not so curious live, but I'll be really curious to see what the Lakers can do against a diminished Phoenix team tonight, because they'll still have Kevin Durant, and Eric Gordon tends to like go for 50 points when things like that happen. But yeah, how you feeling about LA?
I mean, it surprised me. It made me think like, oh, I must have missed a whole storyline in preseason where people were talking about how everybody's expecting LeBron to be playing less. And then it doesn't sound like that was the case. Like, I think other people were kind of surprised that LeBron was playing 29 minutes. The quotes from Darvin Ham after the game, this is from Dave McMenamin at ESPN. Quote, it's easy with LeBron to get caught up in the emotion of the game, and you tend to forget you want to play these long stretches. But in order for him to be as effective as possible, we have to be mindful of the minute output and how long his stretches are. That's reasonable, but also like, we are now on year 20 or whatever of LeBron's teams don't play so hot when LeBron's off the floor. And we are on year, it only feels like 20, maybe four, I guess, of Anthony Davis is the best player on the Lakers and we're going to hand the reins over to him. And every time it seems like everybody talks about that, the reins wind up back in LeBron's hands, because that's the way the team works best. And yeah. So, you know, especially the fact that you're coming off a first half where AD looked fantastic, and then the second half scoreless, and then Jokic runs away with the game. Like, of course, you come out of that feeling like, well, the only way this is going to work is if you bump up LeBron's minutes, you lean on him more. And then what does that mean in you when you get into January or February or whatever. You know, last year, the only time he played fewer minutes than he did on opening night, 26 minutes and a 13-point win over the Warriors in February. That was when he was dealing with that foot and the ankle injury. The next game, plays one more game, then right after that, pops the foot tendon, he's out for a month. So there, it makes sense to me, it makes a lot of sense that they're going to be very cautious and careful with him. And also in the context of something that I heard last night, so I was in Brooklyn. I went to the Nets home opener against the Cavs, which is a very fun game, but we're not going to talk about it much tonight. But Jacques Vaughn was answering a question about why Ben Simmons only played 23 minutes, which is again a topic for another time that's pretty juicy. But they went, I think, 10 deep and had a bunch of guys that played between like 15 and 25 minutes. Mikal Bridges was the only one that went over 30. And his answer to that was, you're going to see this, you know, this year, our group, we're going to divide these minutes up throughout the course of the year. My intent's not to try to blow anyone out at the beginning of any game. You'll see these minutes range across the board because we have depth and versatility. He wants everybody to be able to go extremely hard. He doesn't want them coasting. So the idea of like our best chance to win is if we don't like overload everybody right at the beginning of the year when everybody's kind of just ramping up on their own. And I'd rather have you go super hard for 5 minutes than have you go like eight and then coast for three of them, because you know you're going to wind up playing 36 anyway. So you got to pace yourself. LeBron, we've had conversations in the past where like the tracking data shows that he moves the slowest of any player in the league. It's because he knows he's got to pace himself. Well, one way to help, you know, make sure you're not dealing with the coasting minutes is by just cutting them all together. And then when you've got him on the floor, he's rampaging to the rim. He's taking it end to end in transition. You could not keep him away from the basket when he was out there, but then he's not out there for 19 minutes. And I think Denver was plus 19 in those 19 minutes. So that's going to be a push and pull that Ham's going to have to deal with and have to figure out. Because if you wind up behind the eight ball again, another like beginning of last year, they got off to a really rocky start. Obviously a lot of that was the Russ situation, but if you're a few games under 500, 10 games into the season, are we going to start hearing that LeBron's got to play more now? Seems likely.
So the other game in New York that was not the game you were at, that's right, Boston visited Madison Square Garden. And for a little while, the Knicks were Knicksing. They were grinding it out. They took a late lead. The Garden was blowing up. People were happy. And then Jason Tatum and Porzingis just continued to throw daggers left and right. And it was honestly, the Knicks-Porzingis years are so far in the rear view.
Yeah, it feels like the 70s or something at this point.
Yeah, I don't even like in my head, when I saw a quote last night, someone, he said like, oh yeah, it was extra awesome that it happened here. Like to me, it's like, all right, well, you know, we talked about Luka not having that lob threat. Like that's the what could have been like Porzingis in my eyes. But now he's got, I mean, Tatum and Luka are very different players, but in the how they can pound the ball and everything can run through them, they can really make every pass on the floor because the threat of their scoring is just as dangerous. Like Tatum really is pretty darn close to that at this stage of his career, I would say. And when you add the pick and pop dynamic where Porzingis is stretching out to like 40 feet, it's really scary how much space that everyone has, that Porzingis has on the shot, that everyone else has off the driving lanes and the cutting opportunities and what have you. So like I have thought, I'll be curious after looking at Milwaukee, getting our real first look at them. I got lunch with someone here yesterday who is definitely biased towards the Bucks side, but they were like thinking that Milwaukee is way deeper and more talented and what have you. Boston's top six is really effing good, to the point that like Al Horford coming off the bench was like a news story. Like, which, I mean, that I think will wax and wane. Like every starting lineup, when an injury happens, Al will slide up. And then when that person comes back, we'll inevitably have the like, oh, we don't want to ruin the starting lineup chemistry that's going right on type of things. But for now, I mean, Jrue Holiday looked awesome. Is there any real takeaway that you weren't expecting on paper from this Boston team that you saw come to fruition or that we all kind of were able to see because you weren't at that game, but maybe you've watched some clips and whatnot?
I mean, the big thing is, you know, you mentioned the top six. once you get past Horford playing 26 minutes, yeah, it's Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard and a few minutes of Luke Kornet. So if the version of this team that is going to be a real bear for everybody to deal with requires high 30 minutes from Tatum, Brown, and Porzingis, and maybe they give them that, they absolutely, it could happen. And when it happens, you're going to see performances like you saw in that first game against New York. It's just, I think the question, everybody understood how, like, the case for it working. Now you can play either Porzingis or Horford, go five out all the time, stretch opposing defenses out. You still have the rim protection. You still have elite point of attack defenders, whether you're starting both Jrue Holiday and Derek White, or you're going bigger, and you still have the, you know, the great defenders on the wings. It worked out. I mean, and all of those things really came to pass. Porzingis, 30 points is the most ever by a Celtic in their Celtics debut, topping Dominique Wilkins, 25 points in 1994, also against the Knicks, because all bad things happen to the Knicks. And Porzingis, that new starting lineup, Porzingis at the five, Tatum and Brown with White and Jrue Holiday, plus nine in 19 minutes. The Knicks only scored 85 points per 100 possessions against that lineup. They're going to be a meat grinder defensively, absolutely. And they, Joe Mazzulla still played around a bit with the rotation with the front court. So like about half the game, they were in that one big five out look, but they also played a bunch of minutes with both Porzingis and Al Horford together, with Luke Kornet with either of those bigs. So they still kept size out there. Some of that might be just because the Knicks are a more traditionally big team, where they play a true seven footer in Mitchell Robinson and Isaiah Hartenstein, with a power forward behind that with Julius Randle. So like against other teams, they might go more five out more often, but they've got the flexibility to do it. The existing core that's there is lights out and has a ton of experience playing together. The guys that they've brought in are vets and professionals, and you know, you figure they're going to get in where they fit in. Jrue Holiday, you bring in a guy like that and say, all right, you're going to guard everybody. You're going to start on Julius Randle. You're going to deal with Randle and Brunson and Hart and Barrett and Quickly and whatever, and like crack back on the bigs and do whatever. I think the tracking data from NBA.com had him, the guys shot 4 for 23 against him. And it's like, well, I mean, you know, what the hell are you supposed to do with that when also you've got plus defenders at every other position? There's an opportunity for the Celtics team to be fantastic and lights out. It's going to require those top six guys to play a lot of minutes. And if that breaks down, that's where the system can break down. But didn't break down on opening night. They were able to hold off that late Knicks charge. 12 missed free throws really hurt you in a 4-point loss if you're the Knicks. But I think the Knicks come out of it saying, we're not going to shoot that bad all the time. We're not going to miss that many free throws all the time. And we were right there with the team that people are picking as a title favorite. There's reasons to be optimistic there too. Just doesn't make you feel all that good when you walk out of the Garden with a loss.
One last Knicks thought. I have not seen Jalen Brunson start a game well in a long time. And I was curious to see how things would go for him from the opening jump, now that he's back with an NBA ball with Tom Thibodeau, with his father on the sidelines. And it did not go well. So, I mean, he's a very confident player. He trusts the work he puts in. That's just something I'm keeping an eye on, especially as like the Knicks were hoping that he would be this bridge from year to year that they've never had at that point guard position since John Starks.
Yeah.
So if you're a New Yorker out there, you need that track, that continuity to be something that is real and not just like Julius Randle going on the seesaw of good years and bad years type of thing. So that is really all I had to say there. We're going to talk one last team. It is not my Bulls of yesteryear, because when you have a players only meeting after one game, after Nikola Vucevic told me on the record in Manila, and people continued to say it throughout their media day, knowing this is like the final year for this group to make it happen. It's just when Zach LaVine is coming out and saying we didn't play with enough heart, and the biggest question mark about Zach LaVine has been heart on the defensive side of the ball his entire career. Not good, not good things, but yeah. The Orlando Magic, my Orlando Magic. We're calling it now. My Magic. 30-point win over the Houston Rockets. Now, the beginning of the year, Dan, I like to primarily watch young teams that are expected to take a leap and teams that are new. Orlando, young team expected to take a leap. The Rockets are kind of both. And the Rockets looked terrible. The Magic, maybe it's because of how good they are. I don't think that's entirely what it would. Maybe so. A couple things I just wanted to point out. Aside from the fact that Franz Wagner is a god gifted to Magic Kingdom. And
all right.
He could potentially be the greatest European player of all time. No, I'm not saying that. Franz is just really good. And when he gets in rhythm and when the ball's swinging his way, you can just kind of feel he's going to head fake a dude out of his shoes and sidestep into a three. Like, because you can kind of tell it's coming on screen because he's in rhythm. Like, there are a few players who I have seen who look so good at that size from the perimeter and can also do everything else with the basketball in their hands. Franz Wagner, put some respect on his name. Now, the two things I want to talk about the Magic the most, because when the rookie extensions came out, there was a lot of talk about Nick Okongwu's deal and Josh Green's deal. Cole Anthony's deal took some people by surprise, because through the grapevine, I was very well aware that Cole Anthony wanted like $18, $20 million in AAV. He comes away, I believe the numbers are $339.
Yeah.
Third-year team option, which would be considered kind of like a loss from the agency side of things. If you're one of the cap nerds who like to evaluate these deals like that. I never really thought Cole Anthony has been anything more than that, like a mid-level salary type player at his best. Last night, fresh off an extension, Cole Anthony played the best game I've ever seen him play. Maybe I haven't been watching enough Cole Anthony, but there was both like a mix of on-ball creativity and like Bruce Brown, small guard playing big type stuff, hitting the glass, rebounding, whatever. I know you didn't get a chance to check out this game, so I'm just going to keep raving about the Magic.
Yeah, I'm going to have hearing all this Bruce Brown talk.
Jonathan Isaac, back from the dead, just incredible presence at the rim on Jalen Green. Although I think that play says more about Jalen Green's shot selection and the decision to launch himself from like beyond the dotted line at a 7-footer known to have incredible defensive player of the year potential. I think maybe more about Jalen Green than the athletic feats of Jonathan Isaac being able to deny him at the rim. That's another conversation for another podcast, because he did not. One of my most interesting players in the Western Conference did not trend in the upward direction after that opening night.
No, things would have to be good to be interesting.
Exactly. Jonathan Isaac being potentially back just adds like another body on a very movable contract, all that type of stuff. Like the Magic, I wrote about this in January. They are built structurally from a cap standpoint, also from just a long bodies and athlete standpoint, to have pretty much any choose your own adventure. Do you want them to package a bunch of guards and picks together and go get someone like, you know, I had heard them. I don't know if there was ever a real serious effort. I don't know what the conversations took place as, but like, I know Orlando checked on Drew Holiday, like that type of, like, is there a move like that? Is there a Memphis going to get Marcus Smart type of move for the Magic? Like, they could do any one of those types. They could do anything. They have young centers. They have young wings. They have young guards. They've got Jet Howard and Anthony Black saved for garbage time, who are two lottery picks that like didn't even have a role in a 30-point win on opening night. My Magic are here, man. I just want to say that it's time to get on the train that rides around the outside of Disneyland, or you're going to miss it.
That's a thrilling pitch. We'll say three things quickly, and then I'll get out of here. One is that Cole Anthony, just because I can hear Magic fans screaming at us, two other games that we should note when you say the best Cole Anthony game ever. A couple of years ago against the Knicks, he had 29, 16, and 8.
Look, I'm not talking stats. I'm talking winning plays. That dude was controlling tempo. He was wrecking havoc on both sides of the floor. He was juking out defenders with pass fakes, and he was everywhere. I fell in love with Cole Anthony last night in a downtown Milwaukee hotel room.
Well, that's terrifying. But and then also should note with Jonathan Isaac, Yeah, I mean, this is like the game. His game has never really been the issue. It's just been about keeping him on the floor. It's the injuries, the leg injuries that he's dealt with. He missed all of the 2021 and 2022 season, has not played more than 35 games since 2019, only played 11 games last year, missed the final 2 months. So it's just like, if you could actually get him on the court, yeah, he is an absolute destroyer on the defensive end. And now with the structure of that roster where you've got Paolo Banchero, well, you've got Franz Wagner, you've got Wendell Carter Jr. at the center, he really only needs to be like your fourth or fifth front court guy. And so if he can do that and be a plus player, especially on the defensive end with that versatility, that opens up a whole lot of possibilities for a team that, as you said, can really go any direction they want. And the backcourt, you mentioned Jet Howard and Anthony Black, neither one of them really getting in until garbage time. That's going to be like the superstructure of this Magic season. What happens with their backcourt mix? Because both Markelle Fultz and Gary Harris are set to hit unrestricted free agency after the season. Jalen Suggs becomes extension eligible after the season. This is a big prove it year for him because the offensive game has not advanced at nearly the level that they had hoped that it would when they took him with that top five pick. You know, Cole Anthony gets the bag. It's a question of like where in the future plans is he? Like 3 and 39 does not mean you're a guaranteed starter. It means you're in the plans, but it's up to you to then elevate yourself to the front of them. And then you've got those young guys that are going to be looking to earn minutes, plus all their own picks going forward. SpotTrack puts them at more than $50 million in cap space this summer. Like there's a full cupboard of options, and these guys are going to have to earn their keep. Whether they can do that or not promises to be pretty fascinating because they've got all that they need to make a rise up the Eastern Conference ranks. It's just a matter of who the pieces are when they're finally really ready to get there.
Yeah, I don't think the 339 even necessarily means you're in the plans moving forward, because that was kind of like one theme amongst some of the smart folks that I asked about the extension stuff. All those deals, you know, the Josh Green deal, even like Onyeka Okongwu up at 365, 462 was the number, whatever. All those deals in a new CBA landscape where it's going to be increasingly harder to aggregate salary, like there will be value now for players even to make a little bit less. I know it sounds crazy to like say it's a benefit to making less money than you could be making, but look at like John Collins in Atlanta over the last couple of years, even someone like Rudy Gay, who was only making like $6 million in Utah. At a certain point, when your contract is so good from like a feeding your pocket standpoint, it actually makes it more difficult for players who are looking to be traded to get a new opportunity to get traded. And I think there's benefit to making $10 million compared to $13 million when it's going to be more fungible for you to be parts of things that potentially could lift you to a better situation that gives you more playing time, whatever, whatever. I think a lot of these salaries that we're going to see between now and the next couple of years, it's all going to be in mind of percentage of the cap and also like how tradable will this contract be, because we're just seeing that free agency is kind of dead. Like we haven't seen a major superstar free agent in a long time now. Even, you know, RFA like is kind of dead too. Like I don't know how many more offer sheets we're going to see get signed and not be matched. So that stuff's going to be interesting to monitor moving forward. But that's it. That's our show. The Magic are great. The Nuggets are the reigning champs. 82-0
on the rocket ship. Or not the, yeah, the on Space Mountain. Yeah, there you go.
Space Mountain.
There it is.
Space Mountain's a great ride. I don't remember who it was, but there was like a very important call when I got, when I took my girlfriend to Space Mountain in like February 22 or late January, right before the trade deadline. I remember being like, this would be funny if I pick this up while I'm doing, yeah, but I didn't do that. Okay.
Smart man.
That does it for our show today. Thanks to John Gennaro for doing all the things he does to make this show look and sound great and to provide counsel when we travel on the road. Follow us on the various social media platforms that are still out there. I am at Jake L. Fisher. That is at Your Man Divine. Please subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you're currently listening on, and leave us a 5-star review. Remember, you're getting 4 shows this year, 2 episodes of Good Word with Goodwill, one episode of Divine Intervention with Dan Devine and one episode of No Cap Room with yours truly and Dan Devine. Again, thank you for listening, and we'd appreciate it if you came back again next week for another episode of all those shows and another episode of No Cap Room.